It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
Hey, Neil. Doing really well. Got the visions of sugar plums running through my head.
Nice. Here it's been, there's been snowing sugar plums.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy there. It's, but I'm excited because this is the last, is this the last show of our year?
It is.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I better rename myself correctly on Zoom so that it'll reflect that. Yes, so next time we talk to people, it'll be next year.
It will be next year. It'll be deep into the future.
That's right. Because right now, it's now, but if someone listens to us later, it'll be then.
No, if someone listens to us later, this will be before.
Oh, that's true. So when will it be then?
Then. It'll be then.
Ah, okay. Oh, well.
This is now.
You know, I thought so. It looked a lot like now. So I thought it's...
It does look like now.
It does. Yeah, because I was here before and it looked a lot like this. So.
Yeah, except but now that you mentioned it, it's become before.
Oh, okay. So now, anyways.
Time is such a fleeting thing, isn't it?
Like, it's true. Well, especially in podcast world where we kind of exist constantly in some ways.
In some ways. And of course, you've got, you know, over 10 years of content to go back on if you want.
That's true. We shall never die. But anyways.
All right. Anyways, okay, for everybody else, send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Facebook or Instagram or feedback at songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, to find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with songs that we feature. So yeah, just it's just in the family tonight. We're closing out our 2025 season, and what a season it's been, eh, Phil?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got it. It made me think a lot about our songwriting challenges, because we've always had a lot of them. And this one was the most challenging one because I'd never done anything like that before. And I learned so much. And I think it was really beneficial to me. But the other one that really, I think, forced me to work in a way that I never did before was the one on modes. Where I've always played chords and then come up with a melody just quite organically. When we did the modes one and I came up with a song I was quite pleased with, that was the first time I had actually thought, okay, I need to use these two notes in this kind of arrangement on top of these chords to get the tone of the mode. And I'd never done that before, so I've never been quite considered in that kind of way. It was the first time I wrote a melody, which I quite enjoyed, but was not completely organic. So that, I think that was a great thing for me this year.
And I'll admit, I mean, and I think the point with the songwriting challenges too is that as you dive deep on one of them, then it becomes something in your toolbox that you use. Because since the modes one, I've been much more mindful of when I come up with a chord progression or something. That number one, it is in a mode. I don't necessarily, you know, identify what mode it is, although I am getting better at that too, right? It's like, oh yeah, this is actually a Lydian thing. Whoop-de-doo. It still sounds good. it's still what I want to do. It's still organic in that sense, but it just becomes more in your consciousness, right? And then yeah, you can do things like be very deliberate about your melody choices and make the synergy work with that. Like it's really quite interesting how these things come more to the forefront as you write future songs. Like,
and I think it's also really handy if you get stuck or if you have writer's block. Sometimes you can use these tools to say, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I don't have anything in my mind, but I've never done something in Dorian. I'm gonna play around with Dorian for a while, just as a way of getting yourself into some kind of new mindset.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and of course there are, you know, there are songwriting challenges, and then there are other songwriting challenges from Chad Shank's group and the At Home Songwriting Group. And recently we did a podcast where I participated in the Song Studio ones with Blair and Alistair. And, you know, Toronto Songwriting Association does them, I think, on the month, on a monthly basis. And like, there's lots of opportunities out there to engage in these things. And yeah, they're extraordinarily valuable. Like they're really good. They kind of, I mean, you might feel like they're assignments, but they're actually kind of fun.
Well, and it's, I think what's really important is to get away from the idea that it needs to be a fantastic song.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not kind of writing a song to make a fantastic piece of art. You're kind of writing a song to explore how this thing works. And once you get over that, that kind of frees you up from going, well, is this melody good enough? Or is this chord progression good enough?
Yeah, for sure. And I found either with songwriting challenges, I either do the challenge and I'm really happy with the song and it's kind of done in my mind, right? But sometimes I actually treat it like a springboard. You know, and then I know I've got a second version of that song in my back pocket that I want to explore that maybe still like doesn't even actually meet the parameters of the challenge anymore. It goes outside of that. And that's perfectly okay because, you know, as we know, we can go through many drafts of a song and what you're originally intended to do with it, it may not apply anymore. But the point is you've done a lot of the work already because a lot of the stuff you're going to keep the lyrics, say, and then you don't want to explore that mode. You want to explore, you know, just put it into a major key and go with that. Or you don't want to break out of an odd time signature and just put it into a 4-4 and see what happens kind of thing. Right. So it
helps you achieve mastery. It won't make you a master, but it helps you basically work on your skills in a way that you wouldn't normally.
Well, and it allows you to explore more, but it allows you to actually say, you know, if you say to yourself, okay, I did the songwriting challenge, but it isn't a piece of art yet, right? And I want it to be a piece of art because I think there's something valuable in that process that I liked and some parts of it I didn't like. Okay, fine. But you can take out the bits. We talk about this on with guests as well, where you pull out the gold nuggets of what you've done before or what you've done up until now and then pull it out and rebuild based on that, and then you get closer to, like you say, the mastery or the actual art of it, right? You know, or something at least that you're happy with. I hesitate to say art with a capital A. It sounds a little pretentious sometimes.
But, that's true.
You know, just like one day if you're, you know, because we talked about this before too. A lot of the time, it's like if it sounds good to you, it is, and
yeah,
that's kind of it. That's the only. Bar you can sort of go up to, right?
Yeah, it's been a good year. Are there other shows that stick out in your mind, Neil?
Yeah, there were a few. Actually, it took a minute to review some of the episodes we did. There was one we did way back in March with Chris SD, Sync Songwriter.
And, oh, yes.
And I was always impressed with that show because, number one, I didn't know anything about sync songwriting for, like, if you're writing songs for film or TV and how to get them placed and stuff like that. But Chris SD was extraordinarily generous in explaining the whole process from top to bottom. And he really shone a light on the entire thing and how it works and where songwriters can fit into that system and the kind of things you need to know and the people you need to know and how the whole machine works. Right. So, you know, as much as he's running a business, he was very generous in just explaining everything and especially highlighting where he fits in to that scheme.
Yeah, his course is pretty solid. I mean, it's the real deal. So it's well worth investigating that, I think.
And there were a couple of ones we did based on other blogs and videos and stuff. We did one with Susan Catania from Berkeley, Songwriting for Beginners, because we found this article on Discmaker's blog and then went over these sort of tips for beginner songwriters. And of course, fully acknowledge that every time... This is the kind of thing where you watch YouTube videos and especially with home recording and stuff like that, you watch a YouTube video and either you're going to find it overly simplistic or you're going to find it way above your head because the YouTuber or whoever's writing the article is assuming you know a certain amount already. I mean, we do that on the podcast. We assume you know a little bit about music theory and a little bit about songwriting structure and that sort of thing. You know, and we fully acknowledge that these quote unquote tips for songwriters could very well be tips for beginners, could very well be tips for people that have been writing songs a long time, and you just never attack songwriting from that particular angle before. Because as we know, you know, the more you do it, you know, in your silo, you tend to do the same things over and over again.
Sometimes going over the basics again makes you go, oh yeah, I remember how to do that. Mm-hmm. We had some really good tip shows, like one which was, mm-hmm. Apps and tools for songwriters. Like we do, it's
yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was quite good. And there's another one, band practice tips, which is something I spearheaded because it was definitely information I wish I knew when I had started. That's one of the great things about YouTube and the world is that there is so much information out there for you to get better.
Yeah.
Back before those things existed, you had to buy a book or you had to know someone or you mm-hmm. had to know someone who would tell you because people knew, but they didn't necessarily think about telling you or didn't want to tell you. It's great how much this stuff is out there, but I think the band practice tips would have certainly helped anyone starting out in a band make more use of their practice time as it is.
Yeah, because certainly back in the day, there was no book on that.
Not that I was on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe there was a magazine or something. I don't know. But
well, there might have been. I mean, I used to, you know, read Guitar Player magazine. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember there being any kind of songwriting magazine, although I never really thought of myself as a songwriter back then. So maybe I didn't. I don't know.
Yeah, Fair enough. Yeah. We also had a couple of really, really cool guests. Remember Dexter Sloan?
Oh yeah.
He was a super fun guy, fascinating guy. Leads the first, what was he say, like first country drag band in Canada?
Yeah. Or something like
that. And he's just got this incredible imagination, but he's also really, really keen on music theory and being intentional with your decisions. And he was laser focused on his process about how he constructed his song, like really, really. You know, he's got that amazing balance, like a super fun, quirky guy, but like really, really sciencey on his on his songwriting process.
And very dedicated to very traditional country music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very, it wasn't like, there's a lot of country stars who do basically pop music with cowboy hats on, which is right. Fine, you know. But he was a very traditional country songwriter and loved traditional country songs in a very kind of purist kind of way. And the contrast between him and like his stage persona and also how much fun they had, it was a great combination.
And that's a whole interesting thing too, like this whole traditional country versus modern country thing. Because we've had a number of country artists as well, Cam Brown and Desiree Dorian come to mind from I think Cam Brown's from Toronto area and Desiree's over from Manitoba. But, you know, we've had a number of country artists and they all have their valuable things to them, but you're right. It ain't traditional country anymore, but it's kind of hard to pinpoint, you know, exactly what that is, but certainly Dexter's approach, it was so honest and earnest without being cheesy.
When you do very traditional things, it's hard sometimes to not fall into stereotypes, fall into cliches, because that's mm-hmm. kind of what it is. And he managed to avoid that, which I thought was so suicide cool. And yeah. One of my favorites was Heather Feather, who was a kids entertainer. And country music is one of the places where you can make a living as a songwriter or certainly there is a viable music industry. Kids music is another one. And Heather Feather certainly knew her stuff from an industry standpoint and knew her music theory and how it applied to kids. And, you know, from her educational background, I mean, you know, we have people on the show who just know so much. It takes a while for all that stuff to kind of bleed back into our consciousness because it's, mm-hmm. the amount of information we put out, these people share is just astounding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Heather Feather really found an ingenious way of applying her music theory. Like this is a real life application of music theory towards, you know, especially with her, a child psychology background or whatever, but she really understood how to work with kids and how to write songs in that context, using her music theory, and making the whole thing like her whole approach seemed very clear and focused on that thing, and it was quite incredible.
I'd love to hear what the, if any listeners have certain shows from the past year that stood out to them, because we'd love to hear about that as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Definitely love to hear your thoughts on that. The other one that kind of popped out to me was Zoe Thiessen, her little indie pop song. She had this very deliberate use of dissonance.
Oh, yeah.
Her little part in her pre-chorus, post-chorus, whatever.
Yeah.
that was like, that just made my brain pop. I was like, wow, like we're actually, it's not dissonance by accident, it's dissonance on purpose.
Yeah.
It was like, that's kind of cool.
And not dissonance to be annoying.
No, and not to be annoying, like very clever and a little bit of friction, but not in a way that you would like, yeah, you wouldn't grit your teeth kind of,
yeah,
you know, reaction to it. But yeah, very, very clever. Very, very clever way of doing that. So that kind of popped out at me. It's like, yeah, we're working with dissonance. I never done that before. There's a songwriting challenge. Write a song that's dissonant.
that could be, we have to think about another one. And certainly that's, you know, like how much dissonance does it, before it becomes jazz?
Yeah. And jazz isn't necessarily always dissonant.
I'm sorry, jazzers. Know. It's said with love.
We really love you, jazzers.
We do.
Yeah. And it's even, you know, the jazz people we've had on the show, they're it's the same thing with country. It's more jazz pop than traditional jazz.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of bebop people on.
But I mean, you know, like that sort of modernist 20th century music is more dissonant than anything else. Really. Yeah.
Although we've had, you know, Frank Horvat on. I don't know if he was on the show this year.
Well, he helped us launch the Odd Time Signatures challenge, right?
Yes. And he does 20th century stuff, just beautiful 20th century stuff. And it's not always, I'm not saying music, it's not like it's not poppy, but it's not dissonant sort of noise. It's definitely, well, I can't say it's 20th century, but I guess it would have to be 22nd century?
21st, yeah.
21st?
Or 20, yeah, 20, I don't know, whatever. Current is it's contemporary classical. Say that.
I'm pretty with time today for some reason. I don't know why.
It's just one of those days.
It's probably because we're recording on a Saturday morning as opposed to a Thursday night. So
yeah.
Maybe I'm just more awake.
Yeah, and more and more tip sort of shows we had with we did one with Jessica Stewart about amateur songwriting tips.
Yeah,
which was a cool show. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, we're just gabbing about the minutiae of songwriting and obsessing over these little things. But they're interesting little things to talk about, which, you know, we talk about with the guests all the time, but it's kind of cool to focus in on a few of them and bring some of those ideas more to the consciousness.
But I do like, I mean, like our theme shows, you know, in the past we've done things like movies and stuff like that, which are fun. But this year's more kind of tips things when we would do a theme show. We try to do one theme show a month. We have like three guests and then one theme show. Sometimes we do it. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know, just by who comes by. We hope to continue that into next year. Start coming up with ideas for songwriting challenges. You know, if our guests have some ideas for some songwriting challenge, a challenging songwriting challenge, let us know.
Yeah, for sure. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Feedback at songtalk.ca. Just send us, shoot us an email. And we'll read your ideas on the air and let us know again what your favorite moments from the past year have been. Love to hear your thoughts on that.
Now, Neil, do you spend a lot of time writing over the Christmas break?
I don't necessarily plan to. I'll have some free time over the holidays, obviously. So I might sit down for a little bit and do some stuff. I'm actually hoping to get together with the bandmates and then do some recording over the holidays. Because everyone's got some time off and stuff, and we're not going anywhere. We're staycationing, so
nice.
we'll be in town for that sort of thing.
That's great.
But holiday time and Black Friday and all that sort of stuff. There has been, we're getting offers for all sorts of plugins, but I like it sometimes when bigger companies give us some free stuff, which is
always, like free.
It's always fun because you know it's not some like, you know, random programmer out of their basement, and it might be a virus, and it might not be compatible, and it might just be more headache than it's worth, right? But Sound Toys, who's been a long time plugin developer with some really great plugins, they're currently doing 12 days of free plugins. Every 2 days, they're releasing a free plugin. So far, I've managed to get one that I didn't have already. And I think there's still four remaining over the next few days, so, or the next 10 days ish or 8 days, something like that. It's a good thing when you actually see, you know, Native Instruments always gives like I think they give an end of year or a Christmas Boxing Day free thing, because I haven't seen it yet this year. So I guess it wasn't a Black Friday thing, but it's nice. It's nice if you're, you know, you may as well just subscribe to all their newsletters and stuff. You'll get all the ads throughout the year, but then you'll also get the free stuff around this time of year.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting free stuff. And I mean, in truth, we probably don't need any more plugins. I don't think anyone really needs more stuff.
Well, the one I got from Sound Toys that I didn't have already was their delay plug.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I've already got Native Instruments Replica XT. I had Replica for many years, which is the junior edition of their delay plugin, which is great, and I used it a lot. But the XT edition has a little more graphical interface stuff, so you can see what's going on with the timing.
That does help.
It does help, but the biggest help with the XT plugin is ducking is built into the plugin.
Nice.
Right, so if you don't want the delay going while the vocal is singing, and it only appears during the silences as such, right? Normally, you'd have to set up a send, set up a bus, put a compressor on it, compress the delay, but and do all these extra steps. In the Native Instruments Replica XT plugin, it's literally just a two clicks.
That's set your fantastic. Threshold. That's boom, huge,
right? And of course, the Sound Toys one doesn't have this. I'm looking at this thing going, that's great, but why would I use this if the other one has ducking built in?
Yeah, sometimes there's this thing that sort of it starts to become sort of the basics of or the standard for all plugins, and I wonder if ducking will be that's. And of course, ducking is the process where if you happen to be recording and you have an effect on a vocal or so on, you only want the effect really audible during the times when their vocal sort of gets quiet. You don't want the effect to fight with the vocal. And ducking does it so that when the vocal comes on, it turns the effect down. And then when the vocal goes away, the effect continues, you know, kind of like just sort of riding a volume fader, but it's a very handy tool.
It's a very handy tool. I mean, the typical way that people typically use ducking too is between the bass drum and the kick drum and the bass guitar.
Yeah.
Right. Where they duck a little bit of the bass guitar so that the punch of the kick drum pops out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a subtle thing that you don't really notice it until you turn it off and then turn it on and turn it off. Okay, there's a subtle little extra little punch to the kick sort of thing. So, you know, it's a long-standing technique in studio production.
Yeah, well, and you can do that actually even with your vocal and your mix. You can use your vocal to pull down some frequencies that are same in the vocal, to make it sit down. There's all these things you can do, but of course there's lots of YouTube videos out there that tell you what's out there.
Right on. And going back to our songwriting challenge stuff, this latest songwriting challenge, for me personally, the odd time signature one, I wasn't entirely happy with the song that I came up with for my songwriting challenge answer. But the other thing too was that I'm always these days, whenever I write a song, I'm always like, should I take this to the band? And I didn't want to necessarily give the band this, you know, 7/4, 5/4, 3 multiple polyrhythms and craziness going on. It's like, we don't have the patience or the time to learn all this. Right. And plus I wanted to make a more rocker song out of this lyric. I thought it would be appropriate and just better. Right. So, As a starting point to me exploring further, like using the songwriting challenge as a springboard, like we were talking about before, right? I actually decided to try out Suno. I've tried Suno before here and there, just for kicks, and I tried Suno, and I logged into my Suno account, and of course I'm using the free Suno. I don't have the paid pro Suno, and I gave it this prompt. I basically took my lyric sheet with chords, and I said to Suno, create an epic orchestral gothic rock song similar to Evanescence using this lyric and chord sheet.
Uh-huh.
And Suno came up, get 90 seconds. Came up with such a banger. I was like so impressed with this thing. It was bananas how good it was. It's like crap. Like, of course, it's fully produced and well performed, right? But what I ended up doing with that is like, okay, well, I don't want to take the Suno song and hand it over to the band. It's not my song. It's Suno's song, right? So then I took a couple of the ideas that Suno had done because it actually came up with a clever sort of modal interchange thing in the chorus where it was borrowing chords from all kinds of different key signatures. And it wasn't all that unusual, but it was pretty interesting, and it made for an interesting twist in the middle of the chorus, because you're going from an F major to like an A flat major, and it's okay, like it's kind of a neat little twist. So I kind of took that idea and that chord progression, and then rewrote the whole song based on that.
Oh, cool!
And then as well, at the same time, I had taken my original Odd Tie signature song to our meetup group and got some valuable feedback from the members at the group, and especially something that Paul Gallagher, our good friend of the meetup and of the podcast, Paul Gallagher had said is that lyrically you're kind of mixing metaphors. You got one metaphor in the verses and a different metaphor in the choruses. Right. Oh. And the whole thing becomes kind of muddled, right? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Kind of right. And I know where that idea came from, but no one else will.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so I decided to revise the lyric. And actually went back and forth with Paul like 3 or 4 times by email and said, hey, what do you think of this updated lyric? And he gave me some more feedback. And then finally I landed on something. I didn't take all of his ideas necessarily, but a lot of his ideas I did implement and get me to focus in on how do I transform this so it's one clear metaphor. And came up with another version of the song that I think is more appropriate to take to the band because it's a straightforward rocker, but it took those ideas from Suno about the chord progression and the kind of attitude of it and going, okay, this is what Suno thinks is a goth rock song. Okay, maybe I've written a goth rock song now.
That's cool. Well, I think we have all three versions of your song. Why don't we play the first version of your sketch? So this is what your response to our... Write a song in an odd time signature.
Odd time signature. Okay. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
We came together like Jackson King. I feel the vice grip from the inside, and the rack stretches me out. I played the only
hand. And upon reflection now, I'm like, it's not bad. It's really neat. It's an interesting song. It is a little more, like we were saying before, like it's a little bit edging towards that 20th century thing that you're talking about. Like it's not rhythmically intense, which is what I usually do. So I actually was trying to break out of that.
Well, that's good.
And so in that sense, it's a little bit more classical and a little bit more, it's a little weird.
I love it's one of those virtual singers, but it actually includes the breaths.
Yeah, which I have to put in manually.
But it makes it sound so much more normal. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So what I did first is literally copy and paste this whole sheet, the lyric sheet with the chords into Suno. Suno ignored the chords. It had no idea what I was talking about. A minor 7, C, D minor. DM, what does that mean? It didn't know. So it just took the words and it came up with this electric goth rocker a la Evanescence. And just blew me away when it came up with this. Just like, holy crap, 90 seconds it took to do that with my lyric.
What I don't understand though is why it wouldn't understand your chords though.
It's not a generic AI like ChatGTP or Gemini.
Right.
Right. It's not all encompassing where it can do anything. It's very zero focused on this thing. Because actually, just when we decided we were going to share this on the podcast, because I had revised the lyric, I wanted Suno to give me another version of this song with my updated lyric, and I couldn't get it to do it. I gave it the public link to my Suno posting of this song. I said, use this as a basis, but use this lyric, and pasted the lyric into the prompt. And it came up with a country song that used my realized lyric. It had no idea what I wanted. Right, I thought I was pretty clear about it, but so I think it is very hyper focused on, you provide a prompt, and it only takes the real language from it. Like it wants to come. I guess the developers of Suno figured that most people are not musicians who are using it.
Yeah.
So they assume that we're going to handle the music fully.
Right, right.
Right. You're going to prompt for a type of song, lyric or no lyric, or you're a poet that come up with lyrics, or lyricists rather, that came up with lyrics, and then right. Suno will handle the rest. I get the feeling that's what Suno is. And maybe if I upgrade to the pro account, you can get in and yeah, I think at that point you can go into the individual stems and do further prompting to refine stuff as you want it. But I did like what it did in the chorus: C minor, G, B flat, A flat, F minor, G major. Like, he's twisting and playing with the thing and borrowing, you know, from different key signatures and stuff. It's not, I mean, clearly in C minor, but still with the G major and the F major sometimes and stuff like that. Like, it's really quite neat. So I kind of took that and then redid the song myself, it just using, you know, some guitar loops and drum loops, and I did this very, very quickly. There's no solo section. There's no, there was barely an intro a week ago, and I threw in an intro just for the heck of it. and just with extending the loop, and then of course this is my revised lyric where I'm not mixing metaphors anymore. So I feel like I'm getting closer to what is good, but now that I'm listening to it again, I'm like, my new version, and maybe I need to take it to the band first, but it doesn't sound quite as dynamic and polished as the Suno version.
No,
obviously.
No. It's still
right. And it's not going to, So
no.
I don't want to be misled by the Suno
Yeah.
Wow factor.
Yeah, that's true. done.
But yeah, I'll also haven't worked on an outro yet, or there might be a solo. I don't know.
That's really cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I kind of wonder, and I've got like literally three versions of this song, but right now it's between this one and the Suno one, and do I take a little more from the Suno version? And
I like your version better.
Okay.
The problem with the Suno one is that because it's so produced, it makes you go, oh, that sounds good. And I think as songwriters, you need to not think about how things are recorded, but how good the song is.
Yeah, like look at the bones of the song, right?
Yeah, and I think the bones of your song are a little bit more clear.
Okay.
And I think they're a bit, it's faster, and the Suno stuff is a bit sort of overblown as it's kind of part of it, where this seems like it's more, like it seems like it's like the tempo's better, and I think it works well. And I think the band, you could take this to the band, and I think they really could take it and bring it to the next level. I think it's good. I would definitely take this rather than the Sumo one. The Suno.
Okay, Suno. Yeah. It's been an interesting process, and I'll be honest, I did struggle with the mixed metaphor thing as well, because I was like, what, you know, because the metaphor is, you know, a game of cards or poker, presumably, whatever. So I actually did like resort to Gemini and stuff like that, and ask it like, What's the worst hand you could get, or what's an impossible hand that you can get in poker? And actually, the first time I did it, it actually gave me this idea about the whole idea of five aces. If you get a poker hand with five aces, which if you think about it, is impossible. There's only four aces in the deck, but you got a joker.
Oh,
which is a wild card. Oh, so you get five aces. Complete impossible, like close to impossible. Like very, very slim chance of getting that hand, but it's also impossible to beat. Like it's absolutely unbeatable. Right. Nothing is going to top that hand, right? And then I implemented that, and actually sent the version to Paul, and he was like, "Isn't five aces a thing where you always win? And this song is not about always winning. This song is about getting dealt the bad hand."
Right.
Right. So then I'm like, it was like, actually five aces doesn't work. It's not the right message, right? And so then I resorted to Gemini again. I'm like, what's actually the worst hand you can get in poker? First I asked it, what's an impossible hand? But then I asked it, what's the worst hand you can get? And it came up with, if you get a 2 and a 7 in your first draw, there's a very, very slim chance, because you'd have to get a, you even if you pull a 3, 4, 5, you don't have a straight because you're missing the 6. And if at the most you can get is two pair, maybe another 2 and another 7, which is easy to beat. And like, there's no way you can get, it's a very, very slim chance of you getting a winning hand, unless everyone else has got a terrible hand, right? So they've actually scienced this out, apparently, that the deuce and the seven, if you get a 2 and a 7, like originally you get 2 cards and then you draw more as the rounds progress in poker, right? In that version, is that Texas Hold'em? I don't even know.
Anyway, I have no idea.
Right. And then you draw more cards, right? So if your original hand is a 2 and a 7, you may as well just fold right there. Because there's no chance of you winning.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like,
very, very slim of a chance of you winning. And so that became the metaphor then, deuce and seven.
Oh, okay.
And so I revised my chorus to be, I got a bad deal, deuce and a 7. You dealt me an unfortunate hand as opposed to an impossible hand.
Right.
So it's really more focused on the card playing metaphor, number one. And number two, the message is more clear about it being...
about a game. Yeah, versus Jackson Kings. When you said that initially, especially because of the way the music was written, it makes me think of Jackson Kings in terms of like medieval. That's sort of what I thought of initially, so...
Right. Yeah. But I think by the end of the verse, it's pretty clear, like deal wasn't random.
Yeah.
Win or lose didn't really matter, provided that deck wasn't stacked. Like we're already going into that era of card playing, number one, and number two, something's wrong with my opponent.
Right. That's really cool.
Up to some shenanigans. So, okay. Yeah. Thanks for the feedback, Philip. I appreciate that. Cause it was kind of in my brain as like, cause the other thing the Suno version did was actually in the chorus, it had a lot of movement of chords. In the verse, it stayed on one chord for like 4 measures and then moved to another. Because it was a lot more, a lot less movement harmonically wise. And I think I might want to revisit my verse like that. So, because right now my verse is changing chords every quarter, every four beats, every measure, and my chorus is changing chords every four.
Yes.
Every
yeah.
Measure, right. So I think
it's a good way of giving you a contrast between the verse and the chorus is.
Yeah. Just introduce a little more contrast. But I just got obsessed with the modal thing. So in the verse, I was like A minor, G, G minor, F, F minor, just going down in semitones, basically.
It is fun.
I'm like, this is fun. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's great. And yeah, I definitely take your thing to the band because I think it'll go over well.
All right, great. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate that, man.
Well, and thank you, Neil, for the last year. It has been fun, yeah, as it always is.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic year, and we'll put links to all those episodes that we mentioned on today's show, and link over to my Suno thing if you're curious for another listen of that.
Yeah.
and then maybe I'll report in the new year how this song is continuing to evolve with the band.
I'd love to hear what the band does with it.
Yeah, be kind of cool to sort of showcase that. Yeah. Interesting. So just to go show you, a song's never done. You can keep on. But at a certain point, you do have to like, okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
Write another song.
Yeah, then write another song. Okay. I'm here in the band. I think it's all time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to us.
Thank you, us. Thank I you, like us.
We want to hear from you too. Send your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @SongTalkRadio. Send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performances and full episodes. And subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thanks to all who have supported us so far. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And please join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. Whether you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
PhilEmery.ca.
And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Happy holidays, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. And
keep on writing.